Okay. Let's go ahead and open up the public hearing and ready for staff presentation.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Clint O'Neill, Energy Resource Manager for Love and Water and Power. I'll be going over the PURPA standards for consideration today and our staff findings.
Sorry, hold on. Keep holding. Sorry, Clinton. You have the answer, and let me screen share for Zoom.
Okay, here we go. Okay, so just to start with a little bit of background, what is PURPA? So the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978 was enacted following the energy crisis of the 1970s, and its intent was to encourage cogeneration and renewable resources and promote competition for electric generation. PURPA requires municipal electric utilities with total retail sales of 500 million kilowatt hours during any calendar year to formally consider and determine certain rate making standards. And City of Loveland does fall under this municipal electric utility requirement here. So we've been here before. So in the past, we have undertaken PURPA determination. In 2007, we reviewed 15 standards, and in 2010, there were four. There are details on some of these past determinations in the packet from today. So if there are any questions on those, we can address those after today's hearing. So bringing us to now, the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act resulted in two new standards for consideration. Those two standards are Standard 20, Demand Response and Demand Flexibility, and Standard 21, Electric Vehicle Charging Programs. Okay, so Standard 20, Demand Response and Demand Flexibility. In this standard, so in general, each electric utility shall promote the use of demand response and demand flexibility practices at commercial, residential, industrial customers. And its intent is to reduce electricity consumptions during periods of high demand or high use. A component of this standard is rate recovery. So each state regulatory authority shall consider establishing rate mechanisms allowing an electric utility to timely recover their costs. This also applies to non-regulated utilities, which is City of Loveland. A non-regulated utility may establish rate mechanisms for the timely recovery of costs of promoting demand response and demand flexibility practices in accordance with the standard above, standard A. City of Loveland, we buy all of our electricity from Platte River Power Authority. And there are two main components to that power that we buy, that electricity. It's demand, and it's the amount of usage that we use. So demand is measured in kW, and that's set based off of our total community's demand, right? So typically there is a peak season where we have higher demand, and we need to, and Platte River needs to be able to make sure to accommodate that demand. And then the other component is usage, which is measured how much of that kW is used over time and measured in kilowatt hours. And the last part of that is typically peak demand is the most expensive power that we have to purchase. So when it's really high demand, our prices go up for the power that we consume. So that leads us to why demand response and demand flexibility is important. The demand response provides opportunities for our customers, our consumers, to actively play a role in operating the electric grid. This can be done by reducing usage through energy efficiency, or changing habits and changing the way that devices, at the point in time when they use them, right? So time shifting it. So if we have a period in time of really high use and that demand is at its peak, if we can shift that time of use to a different period of time, we can reduce the overall distribution grid's peak, which will then lower our demand and effectively lower our costs that we would purchasing that high demand power. Some methods of engaging customers to participate in these demand response activities are rate-based, so time of use pricing, critical peak pricing, and various programs. Some of the programs are, the most common ones are direct load control. And some of those, I think the easiest example would be like a smart thermostat, where our consumers may have a smart device that we would share control with to program it and reduce our demand in those peak times on our grid. So these programs, they have the potential to help us save money overall at the community level by reducing the high demand at its key times.
So I got a question. We only have one rate. We don't have two rates.
So we're perfect time. So what do we do now? Currently at the City of Loveland, we do have demand-based rates. Right. So we have several rates ranging from residential to commercial to primary service. And I've listed a few of them out here. Some of our primarily our three-phase customers, our commercial customers, pay a component of their rate. A component of that is based on demand. Right. So it's the actual demand, what their individual demand is. We need to be able to support those customers. And they have higher demand, so that rate is designed to accommodate their use.
We have seasonal peak demands also, like winter and summer.
Yes, yeah. So the demand charges follow our seasonal rates. So all of our rates have a seasonal, so a winter and a summer. And if there's a demand component, it follows that. So we do currently have demand-based rates. We also are currently in the middle of an implementation of our advanced metering infrastructure. And that project is really the foundational groundwork that's going to enable us to be able to continue to promote and continue to evaluate various demand response programs and forecast and be able to get more technical in how we can start to take advantage and leverage demand response. Some of the other things that we currently work on are, we are an active participant with Platte River Power Authority in energy efficiency programs. So that Efficiency Works programs enables our consumers to participate in various ways of demand response. So by getting rebates or getting an incentive to put in energy efficient appliances, smart thermostats, all of those measures help us with our demand, our peak periods of demand. And then one of the last initiatives that we're currently working on is the distributed energy resource management system. And that system is a combination of software and controls and advanced metering to allow us to participate with Platte River Power Authority on forecasting and planning and controlling how we can manage our demand in a more economic way.
So Platte River typically give you an indication of when they think peak demand will occur?
It's not super sophisticated right now. This GERMS project, this software application, is like it's a conglomeration of systems, right? And once that is really implemented, we're going to have a lot more visibility and a lot more of the specific data that we need to start to see those impacts on Loveland's grid closer to real time. So we can make better decisions based off of that data. So with all that said, for Standard 20, we have determined through our findings after review of the standard that the electric utility currently meets the standard and promotes through public education and certain existing demand-based rate structures, the use of demand response and demand flexibility practices by commercial, residential, and industrial customers to reduce electricity consumption during periods of unusually high demand. Beginning in 2024, Loveland Water and Power will begin initiating citywide implementation of advanced metering infrastructure that will allow it to investigate and adopt demand response programs to promote community participation in those programs. The implementation of AMI metering will allow the city to continue to improve its efforts to promote the use of demand response and demand flexibility practices by its commercial, residential, and industrial customers to reduce electricity consumption during periods of unusually high demand. Any questions on Standard 20?
Well, so Clint, I just have this isn't a combative question, but
yeah.
The question that is in my mind is, how much are we spending to do BMI implementation? $12 million?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Probably 14 million.
14 million. How many residential customers do we have?
38,000.
14 million divided by 40,000. I guess as a residential customer, you're just making my life complex. Why do I care?
One key statement, Bill, as I've articulated in the past, without AMI from a renewable energy standpoint, you do not have the analytics to be able to know how to produce. Where to produce all that. So we're in an integrated system now with the Southwest Power Pool, et cetera, but without AMI, you cannot operate a system. You've got to know what the load is. And the problem is you've got 38,000 customers, of which we have 300 or 400 are not going to PV. There'll probably be more. All those are variables in the system. Without the analytics, you have no way to balance load. If you can't balance a load, you're going to trip and you're going to have a couple of states in the US have had that. So again, it's imperative. These are tools in the toolbox to be able to provide the ability to be able to have, whether one agrees or not. I realize people may not agree with getting out of coal, but the reality is you've got to have real-time data coming in. We don't have that today. You have a one-time use, you go up to a meter and imagine, I mean, you could not do that. Literally, it's just impossible. So that's the power of AMI.
And you need that kind of granularity. Couldn't do it at substation level or transformer level.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the nature of distributed energy resources, and those DERs can be several devices, right? It could be a smart thermostat, it could be a smart appliance, it could be solar, battery, electric vehicle equipment, electric vehicles themselves. There's a whole wide array of all of this. And without the data and without getting it close to real time so that we can start to forecast and make a digital twin of what's happening so that we can make decisions based off of that are the most equitable. It's really, really difficult because of just the sheer volume of those devices out on our grid.
So some of this looks like it's a billing apparatus. You can choose to turn your air conditioner on or off or whatever. But that's not really the issue. The issue is the one I just heard talk about, Kevin. This really allows us to have a more stable grid.
And
an area-wide basis.
Yeah, and provide the customer to an insight he or she has never had before. So literally, and I realize not everyone has a cell phone, but pretty much anymore folks are connected. And you literally can track what's going on. So let's say AC comes on, you want to optimize. All that now is in the hands of the customer, just like your checking account. I mean, I always use checking because we all have, whether savings or whatever. So there's a lot of other attributes, but the primary focus is without having AMI, and again, across America, so you can research all this, and I'm pretty confident in this, that is imperative. Again, as the four cities, Fort Collins implemented long ago, well over a decade ago, Estes Park's already implemented, they're fully integrated. And so it's us and Longmont. Longmont's just now implementing AMI as well. So again, all four cities, because we all own and operate, and we're all coming off the same, it's imperative that this AMI program is conducted. Originally, we said 4-year implementation. We're looking at 2 years now. Because of COVID, because of supply chain, it just accelerated everything. So Adam's team, and we're confident we can deliver that. But we've got a lot of work to do in T minus 2 years in counting.
Thank you.
Any more questions on standard 20? I'm going to invite Christine up. She's going to talk to us about standard 21, the electric vehicle charging programs and infrastructure.
Thank you. Christine Schrader, engineer for the city, power division. This is pulled directly from the purpose section of the IIJA. I'm just going to read it to you. Each state shall consider measures to promote greater electrification of the transportation sector, including establishment of rates that A, promote affordable and equitable EV charging options for residential, commercial, and public EV charging infrastructure. B, improve the customer experience associated with EV charging, including by reducing charging times for light, medium, and heavy duty vehicles. C, accelerate third-party investment in EV charging for light, medium, and D, appropriately recover the marginal costs of delivering electricity to EVs and EV charging infrastructure. So to accomplish these things, go to the next slide. Staff has been working on and is proposing the following. So development of EV commercial rate tariff. So years ago, the city embarked upon a project to provide level 2 EV chargers in various places throughout the community. These chargers were really just a jumpstart to our EV infrastructure. So with increased electrification in our transportation methods, faster charging is now a necessity. This infrastructure is better suited to commercial ownership. Power has worked with our rates consultant to develop a rate that encourages fast charging build out without the high penalties for demand that would normally be incurred. This is possible due to the very low likelihood that the bulk of this demand would occur during our peak demand times. This will both promote build out and also keep costs low for the end user. EV infrastructure planning. The Power Division has begun work already with Development Services and the Public Works Division to ensure proper sizing of our infrastructure to accommodate this energy that will be needed to facilitate infrastructure. Public Works is currently working on an infrastructure plan to build out their fleet. We plan to build this out over time using available grants. And the Building Division is currently reviewing NEC 2022, as well as EV Ready building codes to determine what will be needed in order to adopt new code frameworks. This all demands that we have to develop a master plan for the power utility. Currently, we are in development of that plan. And this is due to the requirements of increased electrification of homes and commercial businesses. Some business customers and our residential customers are going to choose to begin adopting electrification methods for whether it's cooking and heating or cooling or transportation. This is going to require infrastructure build out and resizing, which will involve everything from transformers and conductors to protective systems and devices in order to accommodate this increased demand. Is there any questions about this?
Sure, I do. So this is, you say here, for private homes and public businesses. The public businesses include apartments. If I look around the city, they're like dandelions. They're popping up everywhere. And so a large portion of our citizens in the future, I think, will live in apartments. And they're going to want to have access to charging stations in those apartments. And I just don't see anything happening that around.
That has to do with building code. And that's part of what our building division is looking at. And those are code frameworks that are coming down the pike.
So that's something buried in there someplace. It's parks.
It is. Apartments, parking lots, any multifamily type of units will have either EV ready or will have EV infrastructure already in place.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Well, up on what Bill was saying here, there were bills passed in the legislature this year that also promote and encourage HOAs, other common communities, to make sure that they have the best to get it. So I'm getting pushed from that side as well.
What's the source of the regulations?
These are the PURPA regulations under NDIG.
National credit. Percentage of vehicle for electric right now.
Oh, I don't have those figures handy right now. It's pretty low right now. And the whole point of this is to encourage the uptake of electric vehicles.
I have a quick question. I'm just an alternative member. And as we do budgets, we do everything here. Has anyone said, okay, we're going to have 40% electric vehicles in year X, whatever it is, 2030. And we're going to be running heat pumps with emergency resistive heat packs. And we're going to be cooking with electric. And we're going to be heating water electric. Has anyone done a study to say it's going to require so many kilowatts of electricity to do this? And where are we going to get the generating capacity? And what the cost for that build? It just seems like we're building dams for water that doesn't exist.
I don't know about water.
Well, no, we're building taps, we're building golf courses or infrastructure for golf courses, but the dams are, I mean, we don't have the water to support the golf courses.
So the answer to your question broadly is yes. We've been looking at this for a number of years already, as has PRPA and the four cities that are on our communities. So we have been looking at it. It's difficult to plan what you're unsure of, but we are putting in place plans and systems and looking at upsizing our infrastructure so that it'll accommodate that. And we're also looking at, you probably know that PRPA has a plan to go to 100% non-carbon by 2030. So it's an aggressive plan, but they're looking at alternative sources of generation. So all of those things have to be looked at, and we've been looking at them. We don't have, I don't think that anybody has the silver bullet yet, but we're working on it.
Sounds like a lot of cart before the horse. It's just.
No, it's a plan. It's how you get from point A to point B. You just have to move.
Thank you.
What's the source of, you're going to be non-carbon by river, what's the source of electricity?
They're looking at several methods. They're already buying some wind, they're solar. There's a lot of hydro generation that's already in the mix.
And we'll be having a presentation in the next couple months. I lose track with Platte River, and that will give all of you an update on what's called the Integrated Resource Plan. And from that, all of our portfolio, including some new technology that I just looked at because I went back with the directors of California, that'll all be spoken about. None of that's been chosen, but you'll get a good presentation on the actual portfolio. Christine's right on what we currently have, but things are moving very, very quickly on some non-carbon sources for production that look very feasible. So you will get to hear more about that here in a few months.
Okay,
I have a quick question. Yeah. Out of the current city charging stations, what's the usage rate right now?
I don't have that number right now. You know, most charging right now is done at home. Probably 80% of electric vehicle charging is done at home. Very little of it is done out. But that's probably largely due to the low uptake in electric vehicles also. So I imagine over time that will increase. Pretty early. Alice?
I just might add, I'm kind of old and maybe aging, but this seems to kind of hamper the competition in our free market economy. We're proposing promoting a certain portion of a society that uses transportation, and we're kind of pushing them not to make their own choices, you know. But I think if electric vehicles are good and everybody likes them, they'll buy them, they'll use them, and then we got to provide power for them. But you got a choice there. You can rather go with an electric vehicle or a fuel vehicle. And vehicles are so good, then people will move towards that.
But I think what we're doing is we're facilitating that choice, right? Because you've got to have infrastructure in place. While 80% of charging happens at home, there's this thing called range anxiety. And so you need to have the availability of charging infrastructure out in public places so that people don't get stranded, because people do have the availability of gas stations everywhere, ubiquitous. So all this is doing is providing that level playing field, you know, and the availability to not get stranded somewhere because your choice has been to purchase an electric vehicle as opposed to a gas station.
I can understand that. But in the resolution, it says vote RVs. So I have a little problem with that. But anyway, that's fine. Any other questions?
You know, it seems like we're running a huge program for 3% of the population.
I don't think that's the intent. The intent is to make available electrification of our transportation sector to everybody. And I think that's the intent. This 3%, those are the early adopters. You know, those are the people who have looked into the technology and just want to strike out on their own. So all this is trying to do is make it more available to everybody. So it's connected.
Ford Motor Company recently did a study on their electric vehicles. They're losing a huge amount of money on their electric vehicles right now. They've decided to go back to manufacturing more of the gas-fired vehicles. So it's kind of trending in the wrong direction.
That is counter to what I've read, but I don't know specifically about it.
They particularly looked at the F-150 vehicle.
There's a lot of investment in that vehicle, so that's not surprising.
It's a big serving vehicle. So they're losing a huge amount of money on that vehicle electrification.
I don't know.
Yes. Right. Any other questions? Okay, let's open it up to the public testimony. Is there anybody in the public who would like to make a comment? Anybody at all? Bruce, you got something?
I'm Bruce Croissant, an early adopter. Since December of 12, I've had 4.5 kilowatts of solar on my roof. That produces for me about 6 megawatt hours a year of electricity. My house consumes about 3.4 megawatt hours. So I produce considerably more than I use. Excuse me, I'm getting old and my voice gives out.
Wow.
So for a long time, I've been concerned about the special rate that the city has put on self-producers. There's a fudge factor that is added to make my hookup charge more than a standard consumer's house. I have an explanation for that. I've tried to get that across, but nobody has ever talked back to me about it. So my comments aren't against this. I think this is an excellent way that the city is going. I have also a plug-in hybrid car. I use a demand time method of charging it. So during the middle of the day, I plug my car in and I use the electricity that I produce to charge it up. I'm exceptionally pleased with the way things are going. Recently, I added batteries to my house. And so during the summertime, because I did an error in calculation, I didn't buy quite enough battery. So in the wintertime, it doesn't work very well. But in the summertime, I don't consume any electricity, basically, from the city. So to argue against ice is great, electricity is bad. We're warming our atmosphere largely by burning gas in houses and cars, filling the atmosphere with carbon dioxide. We can't continue doing that. We need to move from internal combustion engines to electrified vehicles. And electrified vehicles are, in fact, more economical than ICE-powered vehicles. Just think of the myriad gears and valves and levers and everything that have to operate, the maintenance that you have to do to an ICE engine to keep it running. Whereas an electric motor is sealed, there's nothing to do there. It's no wonder that auto manufacturers are discouraging manufacturing electric vehicles because they have a vested interest in providing service once they get the vehicle in your hands. So I'm drifting off the what you're discussing here. I like what I hear. I think it's the way to go. I would just like to talk to somebody about my little problem with your calculating rates.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? All right, staff response.
Hey, oh, Mr. Croissant, one, thank you again for the background, also, you know, explaining about how your history is very beneficial. So thank you for that.
And I will, and I do have your contact, and we now have a new manager, Adam, along with other staff. We will set up a meeting with you and go through the calculations. I know you presented that. You know, we do pay attention. We'll hear you out, and we'll go through that, you know, the calculations and just go from there. But my commitment to you is we will be following up soon on your point about listening to staff. So thank you for your comments today.
I was going to ask you, Plant River Power Authority, they're supporting this resolution.
I would say that, you know, and Derek weigh in with the legal, but because this is a requirement, the purpose of today is, you know, we have to give an update, and PRPA supportive of us, you know, both having the hearing and conducting this to be able to get the input. So that's my read on it. It's really more of a function of, you know, that it's a requirement.
Any other comments?
How significant is the commercial demand discount?
You need to identify yourself.
Ryan Nelson. I work with a local energy storage startup here in Loveland. I was just curious what the difference in the commercial rate structures would be for the EV charging.
So we're currently working with our rate consultant on that.
Sorry, Chris, it's really hard to hear just because of the acoustics.
So we're currently working with our rate consultant on that. We don't have numbers set exactly, but it will be a significant reduction. You can give me a call later on. Once we get closer to that.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we're ready to close the public hearing. So let's go ahead and close it and bring it back. And is there any other discussion? Let us hear a motion.
I move to adopt resolution number R-1-2023U. Recommended determinations of the Loveland Utility Commission for consideration by the Loveland City Council related to two electric utility standards within the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, as amended by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021, following public notice and hearing before the Loveland Utilities Commission on such utility standards.
Is there a second? Okay, Randy, second. Any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Unanimous. Okay.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think this is the first time Plant has sat on the other side of the table here.
Yeah.
Thanks, Plant. Good job. Next item is the Sweetheart Alley Sanitary Sewer Replacement Project. And Don's going to help us out here.